Francisco.
Okay, welcome to episode 6 of the Bitcoin Gauntlet. Today I'm thrilled to have the prolific podcaster, Jekyll Island denouncer, and Prussian model disrespecter, Daniel of the Family Prince. How are we doing today, Daniel?
That was a great intro. Thank you very much, Tom. Yeah, appreciate it. And appreciate everything you're doing now, with your podcast. We need more people like you. There aren't enough Bitcoin podcasters in the space. End of story. That you cannot, I will die on that hill. We need more Bitcoin podcasts.
Agreed. Maybe that would not make for a good debate question here. I would certainly agree with Bitcoin Pierre on that one. So, for the listeners and a brief overview for Daniel, the way the gauntlet works is Daniel will be presented with three categories, all Bitcoin related. Then he will see three prompts, debate topics. He'll pick one. He'll decide whether he wants to argue in the affirmative or the negative. Then maybe I'll have some follow-up questions, try to debate the other side as best as I can. And then we'll do that for four rounds. There'll be a bonus question at the end, and I'll give Daniel a score. So, Daniel, are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Round one, we have Austrian economics, Bitcoin culture, or mining.
Bitcoin culture.
All right. Bitcoin culture. Number one, toxicity is a net benefit for Bitcoin. Number two, Bitcoiners are better off not telling anyone they're involved with or hold Bitcoin, i.e., they are Bitcoiners. Or three, Bitcoiners need to focus their messaging more on Bitcoin and less on other popular cultural issues.
Man, number three is me all over, isn't it?
I suspected as much, yeah.
All right, let's go with that one then.
And in the, are you going to argue for or against that one?
I'm going to argue against that one.
Okay.
Bitcoin. So it's Bitcoiners need to focus their messaging more on Bitcoin and less on other popular cultural issues. Yeah, I'll argue against that.
All right. Have at it.
All right. Okay. Now, for those of you that might follow my podcast or my Twitter feed or Nostr feed, you might have seen over the last 18 months in particular, I've been tweeting or posting heavily about something that is very concerning to me, and I think should be concerning to everybody, is the so-called chemtrail phenomena that we have been ravaged with in this part of the world, Northern Europe especially. So I can't speak for the other parts of the world. I know it goes on in America as well because I see a hell of a lot of people tweeting about it over there as well. So it took me, man, I dragged my feet on this one. It took me a long time to, one, come to terms with what was actually happening and to start trusting my own eyes because I had other Bitcoiners in my ear telling me what was going on. Very trusted Bitcoiners, very, very good friends. And I was reluctant to be drawn into that rabbit hole. And over time, I just couldn't stop seeing what they were seeing. And these persistent contrails is what we're told they are. We're gaslit into believing they're persistent contrails and that they are just water vapor and ice crystals that form these grid patterns over vast areas. And especially over where I was living in France at the time, it was happening there all over the countryside as well. But it happens over major cities, a lot. And yeah, I sat with myself for a while and I'm like, why? What's stopping me tweet about this? Because clearly it's something I have a strong aversion to. Once you realize that it is happening and it has been happening for years and it's happening not even against your will because you don't even know. Like this is the dirtiest trick. That they're doing it. And it comes under such headings as solar radiation modification or stratospheric aerosol injection. And you can find the patents for these exact projects that go back decades. And you can start looking into different forms of weather warfare as well, which has been patented. We're talking hundreds of patents on weather modification technology. And when I realized I was self-censoring, and I realized I was self-censoring because of ego, because I didn't want to, subconsciously, I didn't want to harm the persona, in air quotes, or integrity or reputation that I'd built up talking only about Bitcoin or homeschooling. They were the other two things I was known for. So it was a big surprise to people when I started tweeting about this, and it ruffled some feathers, and I got some DMs from close friends who, that come from a place of love. It's like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, you're going to ruin everything. Just stick to Bitcoin. Don't muddy the waters here. You're going to lose. One guy said, we need people like you to only focus on Bitcoin, because if you start talking about stuff like this, you're going to lose integrity, and that hurts us all. And I'm like, man, that's, I just didn't agree with that. I couldn't agree with that. I couldn't agree with self-censorship, especially over something that I see as critical to everybody's well-being and health. These lunatics now. You might have seen the headlines coming out of the UK because I'm tweeting them and posting them on Nostr, but they've just basically admitted it. And then now they're saying, yeah, we have a £57 million fund to run solar radiation modification projects throughout Europe to help dim the sun. And the idea being, we spray tiny little particles, and it's good for your health, don't worry. And they'll say it's just sulfur dioxide, bro. It's like, okay, well, what the hell's that in the first place? But it's tiny, tiny little particles, reflective particles that are going to bounce back the sun's rays back up above the cloud cover that we're creating, so that we can, keep the planet at a core temperature, so we don't raise above the 2 degrees for our net agenda of net 2030 or whatever it is. Like, complete and utter total lunacy. So yeah, that's why I'm kind of passionate now about, oh, look, I hate to quote Taleb or whoever Taleb's ghostwriter is. Well done, sir. See a fraud. If you see a fraud and don't call a fraud, then you're the fraud. And I think that's where Bitcoiners need to be thinking, not just in our own little circles, but with everything. And if we didn't have other people, pointing out, you name it, all the health benefits that we've all learned. If we didn't have a Bitcoiner saying, yo, you should look at the carnivore diet, or you should stop, eating anything that contains seed oils, or you should stop and think about applying sun cream to your skin, people like Jack Cruz, that brings, look, Jack's had what, 5 decades career as a brain surgeon, and we expect him to stop talking about that and only Bitcoin? Like, no, that's nonsense. We need people that are coming into the space to bring all of their life's work with them, so they've been the insider in that. I used to work in foreign exchange. I can speak about that. That is something that people need to hear. And I need to hear what an electrician or an engineer has to say about mining and mining rigs, and how you manage a grid by just putting a shipping container full of miners next to a freaking wind farm. And then I need the engineer to tell me how the wind farms are completely and utterly hopeless and useless and a waste of money. Not just tell me stack sats. And number go up and everything's going to be fine. So that would be my argument. But yeah, happy to hear the other side of that.
Yeah, so one note I'll add to the particle spraying is something I heard from whether you or the listeners like him or not, Brett Weinstein, that it's inherently a violation of informed consent. That I didn't consent to this being sprayed in my air, and I am just going to be exposed to it. So that's one thing. The other thing I would say is that maybe in the prompt I could add that it's like, to what end? Like, do we want to bring on more Bitcoiners? Like, how do we best serve Bitcoin? And so if we're talking about these other things, like from personal experience, I found it very difficult to arrive at libertarianism or anarcho-capitalism without understanding Bitcoin first. It wasn't until I understood Bitcoin that then I could see anarcho-capitalism and Rothbard, and that Bitcoin really clarified my mind and focused it much more. So in that case, that's a very clear movement from the money and the state. But I wonder how much that people who aren't Bitcoiners yet, when they hear these other things, how difficult is it for them to understand them, whether it's the food or anything else, the sovereign stuff? Is it too off-putting for them if they haven't understood Bitcoin first? And then maybe the other point I'll add is that it is great to, this is all great stuff for Bitcoiners, and it helps makes Bitcoiners like more empowered and healthier and more sovereign and better thinkers. And that helps Bitcoin too. So no solutions, only trade-offs. So do we need more new coiners, or what's the balance between more new coiners and stronger Bitcoiners?
Yeah, it's the age-old question. I guess, I mean, we've all tried to orange pill people, haven't we, in the past? And to varying degrees of success, generally pretty poor success. Because just talking about Bitcoin alone turns people off. What are you talking about? I don't understand it. I don't talk about money. That's taboo. Or generally, they don't want to talk about money because of their pre-programming that they're not intelligent enough to talk about money. And and to your point, so if we look at Rothbard, did we want Rothbard just to talk about specifically about Austrian economics? Or did we want him to write a book titled Education Free and Compulsory, where he takes down, systematically takes down the Prussian schooling method? He was certainly out of his lane when he started on that, but with his ability to do that and analogize as well. I mean, analogies are very, very, they're great ways. And how many of us have learned about Bitcoin through analogies? And probably Saylor is probably well known for using many different analogies. So I think meeting, I mean, Jeff says it all the time. We were talking about Jeff Booth before we started recording, meeting people where they're at. So I tend to now try and figure out, rather than just go in heavy-handed, Bitcoin, 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 this, that, and the other thing, and wear all the merch and whatever, and just hope someone points at your socks and says, "Oh, what's that?" and wait for the conversation. So where's their pain? What are they talking about? And a great video for this is Joe Bryan. What's the problem? And if you haven't seen that, please go and watch it, because that's what he takes 45 minutes, slideshow, the whole thing, trying to guide people through what the problem is. And everybody that watches that video is going to click with a certain part of it. And then at the end, it's like the explanation about the capped supply, and this is how inflation works, and this is what happens on this side of things, and this is what would happen on a Bitcoin standard. And that's gonna make a huge difference to people. So yeah, but I don't know. I feel as though I've been rambling. I hope I've got my point across. But I think Bitcoiners need that they need to approach these other cultural issues with integrity, with an open mind, and then kind of get to the core of it, have a look at where are the incentives coming from, try and unravel it. And then when you do get into a conversation with somebody about that particular thing, you've always got a way to kind of like pin it to Bitcoin and to sound money and how it would be different.
Yeah, I was going to add that last point that you just said. I think that's powerful. Everyone, even non-coiners, maybe has some things that they're suspicious about or some propaganda that they're trying to unwind from the century of fiat. And that could always be like an anchor point to start with them, curry some favor and be like, if they lie to you about this, like what else might they be lying to you about? Or here's how Bitcoin fixes this, in most cases, I'd say. So,
Cool.
all right. Round two. We have psychology, protocol changes, or miscellaneous.
We got to go with number two, right? Protocol changes. Is that, I mean,
Okay.
yeah. All
No,
right.
no op return stuff in this yet. I'm
Oh, okay. Oh,
still
that's what I was
waiting.
expecting. So now you've thrown me into left field here. Okay, fine.
Still waiting to see on that one, but I don't know if anyone's chosen this one yet, so I'm excited for it.
Okay.
Number one, UTXO ownership potential needs to expand dramatically for Bitcoin to stay decentralized and secure. Number two, if quantum computers can break current key schemes, it's better to fork and burn old coins than to allow them to be swept by quantum computers. Or three, a hard fork with a one-time block size increase that can be included in a hard fork for an existential bug, for example, the 2106 timestamp bug, will succeed.
Wow, I feel as though I'm going to be swimming in deep waters here. UTXO ownership potential needs to expand dramatically for Bitcoin to stay decentralized and secure. Quantum computers, hard fork with a one-time block size increase.
So I don't know if you're familiar with the third one, the 2106 timestamp bug.
Yeah, very, yeah, a little bit.
That
The
we're gonna.
idea being that when we get to 2106, there's a bug in there that's just gonna fuck everything up.
Yeah, the changes stop. So it's almost certain that we'll need a hard fork at some point anyway to fix that bug. It's maybe not 100% certain. Maybe we could get away with a soft fork, but for now, it seems like we definitely need a hard fork. And so maybe there will be different proposals.
All right, I tell you what. Okay, how about I switch this on you? How about I choose number one? UTXO ownership potential needs to expand dramatically, but you go first.
Ooh. I'll try my best not to get canceled here. I gotta tread carefully with this one. So if I were, I mean, I could argue both sides. So we'll start with that. Not necessarily any hills I'm dying on here. But for fun. I'll argue in the affirmative that it needs to expand. So based on the numbers I've heard from maybe the Stefan Levera podcast and just in the ether, it's only possible for, say, something on the order of 10 million UTXO owners. And that may be too centralizing of a force, that we may go down the same road that gold went down. I'm obviously w well aware of Lightning Network, Arc, eCash, Cashew, etc., Betty Mint. But without maybe something like CTV. I'm also very interested in CISA, cross input signature aggregation, and perhaps even the third question, when we have that hard fork, if we're going to have to hard fork anyway in, 80 years or so, or somewhere around there, maybe there'll be different proposals of hard forks in order to fix that problem. It could be problematic that it could fractionate the hash too much during that event. It also might not be. It might be very simple that we don't make any changes. We just fix that one thing. I think in all likelihood, the fork that'll win will be the one that changes nothing else except the timestamp. But there could be other proposals out there that maybe the cost of running a node with these 4 megabyte blocks might just be so cheap in God only knows. I mean, in 80 years from now, who knows, like, how much better the technology and the storage will be, how cheap it will be, especially as Bitcoin monetizes and keeps plummeting prices. We have extreme technological deflation. So finding some other way to expand who can own UTXOs, otherwise we may go down the same route that gold went, and we wind up centralizing and we get a kind of runaway rehypothecation that we can't stop. Not necessarily a hill I'm dying on, but it's something I'm thinking about.
And it's interesting, you bring up an interesting point here. We kind of, it looks like we might cover one, two, and three here, but the quantum computer argument that quantum computers can break current key schemes, it's better to fork and burn old coins.
If
If, right, if. But this is one that's thrown at the Bitcoiners all the time, right? Well, quantum computers, don't forget about quantum computers, guys. It's going to come and fuck your shit up, and then that's game over, and you've got nothing, and you wish you would have just stayed with your Benjamin Franklins and we ever, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I mean, why do we focus on the negative? It's like, okay, fine. If quantum computing is coming and number go up technology is going to do what it's going to do to the price of Bitcoin, and there's going to be the, as again Jeff talks about in the price of tomorrow, huge deflationary pressures on technology. Technology is going to become exponentially cheaper, exponentially better. Can't we use that then? We just focus on the negative. It's a very human thing. Who's to say we can't use that to figure out something to fix the 2106 timestamp bug? Like, that to me would seem like a much better use of time and probably more probable than breaking Bitcoin and stealing everybody's funds and sending everything to zero. And as for, yeah, I mean, the UTXO ownership. So the idea being that, I mean, yeah, you've said them all before. Like, I think that is. Is that not, well, it's the solution that we've dreamt up right now with the Fedimint and the Cashew and eCash, and there will be more. Yes, I know that was just layer two, and these people, these latecomers, for want of a better term, are not going to be able to get their hands on the UTXO. How many of us have our hands on a gold bar, or have ever had our hands on a gold bar? But yet, here we are transacting with each other every day, going out into the economic marketplace, making it a better place, adding value, adding our skills, spending our time and energy on things that we think are worthy and worth time doing just for fiat currency, let alone imagine what we'd be doing for, sats. So yeah, I think that's where I kind of fall. Yeah, not much more to add. Sorry, I can't get too technical on either of those points.
Okay. I mean, I'm still super optimistic, obviously. If even if it does really become a problem, and it starts to centralize the network and threatens, say, the 21 million supply cap, I'm pretty optimistic that humans will figure out a way to fix it. And I mean, there is always the chance that, like, this is the great filter. This is related to the Fermi paradox. Like, can the civilization maintain its discovery of absolute scarcity or not? And if it can long enough and get it to a point where it doesn't need to be perfect, like Tomer Shkreli, it doesn't need to be perfect, it just needs to last forever. If they can, then they can pass through that great filter. And if they can't, then they disappear. So I'm all in. There's no other option. So for me, I'm super optimistic. And if it fails, it fails. But I'm not really worried about it because I have nothing to lose. I'm like, this is it. This is the thing.
Yep.
Okay, hopefully I didn't say anything too cancelable.
I don't think.
Just for the record, I'm not a big blocker. I'm not in Bitcoin Cash or any of the other shitcoins, but it's maybe in an important issue to talk about. So, all right, round three. Adoption, network slash consensus, or miscellaneous?
Let's go with adoption.
Number one, stablecoin adoption is a net negative for Bitcoin adoption in a given jurisdiction. Number two, countries that attempt CBDCs will hyper-Bitcoinize faster than those that don't. Or three, eventually adoption will accelerate and break diminishing returns.
Number one and number two are juicy. Yeah, let's try number two. Countries that attempt CBDCs will hyper Bitcoinize faster than those that don't. Okay, I will argue for that. It sounds like a fun thing to do, and the reason being, so I'm based over here, Northern Europe and the EU, under the guidance of their distinguished leader, who is actually, was found guilty in the court of law for aiding and abetting the movement and laundering of some money, but then found herself that's when she was the head of the IMF, but now she finds herself as the head of the ECB. The wonderful Christine Lagarde came out just 2 or 3 weeks ago at time of recording to say that they will be trialing the digital euro as early as October. Now, this is absolutely frightening because not only are they clearly rushing it through, I mean, we all know how well that goes, but we all know how well governments, and especially governments like as big as the EU, would fuck something up. Like, it's a odds on chance they're going to get something completely screwed up and waste a lot of money doing it. And they're going to try and roll out this digital euro. It's going to be a spectacular failure. But at the same time, it's going to be the nudge that tens of millions of people across those jurisdictions are going to need to start understanding what's coming their way. And there's a this generation of people. So if we look at people that are more likely to be pushed into these this digital euro, that's going to hurt the most. You're looking at kind of like 20 to 60-year-olds. Now, they went through this 1999. That's when the euro came out. So the Spanish lost the pesetas, the Dutch lost their guilders, the Portuguese lost their escudos, the French lost their francs, the Germans lost their Deutschmarks. Every single penny that they had worked for, every single second of every single day that they'd spent time and energy and their skill set to save and earn in that fiat currency was rug pulled from right underneath them. And that was only in 1999. And memories are short, but when it is, when it's money, when it's this important, people will remember, and they will have like shocking knee-jerk reactions to this digital euro, and that will drive people, unfortunately, into crypto land as well. and a lot of people are going to get burnt going across there into the into those waters. But that ultimately leads to Bitcoin too. So we say Bitcoin is a Trojan horse, and this is the exact time. So please go ahead, Madame Lagarde. Let's go. Bring it forward. Bring it forward to September. Move fast and break things. Let's really bring it on the people, because I am just sitting there waiting to see the fallout. And Bitcoin is ready. It's the safety net, and that's where people are going to come.
Yeah, on a personal level, I tend to agree. What would you say about the, well, and as a side note, I'm not super worried about CBDCs, maybe as much as other people in the Bitcoin and even non-Bitcoin space are. Counterintuitively, I think the commercial banking system may be on our side, that they would not like to be disintermediated by the central bank. The central bank already almost is the CBDC already. Like they have one node. There's like Saifedean says, there's one node at the central bank. But the commercial banks may not like it very much because they don't want to be disintermediated. So in the United States, it looks like banks will be starting to be custodying Bitcoin. And if you're worried about being disrupted or attacked by the central bank, what's the best defense against that? It's Bitcoin, and for individuals, families, and perhaps even commercial banks as well. Now, to maybe argue the other side a little bit, what would you say about these CBDCs being used for behavioral control in order to basically bribe people? That you get the UBI, you get goodies, you get little airdrops for good boy behavior, for good tweets, punishment for bad tweets. And how do you think that that could keep people in the system and be like disallow or prevent people from moving to Bitcoin instead?
Yeah, I do. And I think, to your point earlier about the great filter, this is going to be part of it. Because I think the tactic they're going to use is, first of all, to entice you into exchanging your fiat for the central bank digital currency or the digital euro. They're going to set an exchange rate, and they'll set it favorable, and they'll give you a time for you to change on that exchange rate. They'll say something along the lines of, over the next 2 weeks, any fiat money that, they won't use that word, euro, that you convert into the digital euro will be converted at like 1.2, whatever. And people are like, wait, what? So I've got 10,000 euro, but that's going to become 12,000 digital euro. I'm in. That they will absolutely go for it. And you only have like, and all you got to do is download this app and upload your picture and upload your passport number and upload your driver's license number and upload your social security. Because if you qualify for social security, you'll get an extra little bit on top of that, because all your child welfare payments, they're going to be digital euro now. And anything else, like if you get housing benefits, also only going to be digital euro. So the carrot is going to be dangled. And that's where. That's the great filter, because this is decision time, right? And those that sit back and think more critically about it, and I'm not even talking about the people that are in Bitcoin. They might be in other movements. They might be in freedom movements. They might be in they might be libertarian. They might be anarcho-capitalist. That there's shit tons of these people that we just don't know about. That these might be the people that were woken up during 2020 and disagreed with lockdowns, disagreed with mask mandates, disagreed with taking jabs. Like these people are awake, and they will be the more critical thinkers. It's going to be the sleeping sheep that take that bait. How many of those is that going to be? I have no idea. And once you're in, can you get out? I don't think so. unless the digital euro completely collapses, like catastrophic, which it will do because the app will go down and people will be left with absolutely nothing for days because because that's just how that this stuff's going to work. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to give us all a very good gauge of the social demographics and how easily people are going to be socially engineered and where we truly are on this, this Fermi paradox and this great filter. We're going to find out. It's coming. It's coming to a country near you.
I'd add that maybe some of the mistake that people make who are super fear-mongering about the CBDCs, and I definitely share all your concerns. But from an economic standpoint, one of the mistakes I think people make is they think central planning works. They think that central planning is somehow more efficient. And they don't realize the price distortions or the economic calculation problem. The same mistake that people in even, the 80s made as the Soviet Union was collapsing. They famously wrote in the textbooks that the Soviet Union was going to overtake the United States, and like a year later it was gone because they really think that central planning is more efficient than free markets, and CBDC is like the final form of, central planning over the money. And I think it would so distort economic production that there wouldn't be enough production to even keep this thing going. So I wonder if bringing about the CBDC just hastens the collapse of these big polities, the EU and all these governments.
Here's an interesting one. I can hear brains ticking. It's like, yeah, well, I would, because they might even try and airdrop some just to get some in circulation to get you used to using the app and blah, blah, blah. I can hear Bitcoiners now. Yeah, airdrop me the CBDC, bro. I'll just buy Bitcoin with it. And, don't do that. No, because that will be totally tracked, and you will be giving up a lot of information. This isn't a UBI check coming through the post, which you take to your bank, or it's slightly different. Because don't forget, to download that app, you're going to have to give up everything, everything. And if you're the dude that accepted, $1,000 airdrop to trial try tr 1,000 euros airdrop, excuse me, to trial test the CBDC, and you just hoon into Bitcoin with it on your Relay app, I think that's probably a bad call. But you guys do you, and let me know how it goes.
Yeah, and I would think that at some point they would shut down the conversion anyway to Bitcoin. They'll probably it just like a walled garden. Like they'll bring you in, and it'll be a nice garden, and everything will be fine. And they'll just keep building up the walls and closing the exit, just gradually, in order to keep you in. But it would be an attack on Bitcoin, and in a certain sense, I welcome attacks. Bitcoin is anti-fragile, so the more we get attacked, the stronger we get.
Another nod to Taleb's ghostwriter.
Yeah,
Very
right.
good work, sir. Or madam.
So that's all I got for that one. I don't know if you got anything else to add.
No, I think we covered it.
All right, final round. Round four, Austrian economics, political philosophy, or regulation?
Let's go economics, Austrian economics.
All right, let's do it. I think I have one just for you. Let's see. Number one, Bitcoin is not a parentheses inflation hedge. Two, fiat money in the 20th century was inevitable, and therefore no politician or government are to blame for fiat's emergence. Or three, Bitcoin prevents hyperinflation by gradually deflating the bond market. And that's a Saifedean take, number three.
Interesting one. Yeah, number two. Let's go with number two.
I had you, I think that was what I expected. I had you in mind for that one.
All right. Fiat money in the 20th century was inevitable, and therefore no politician or government are to blame for fiat's emergence. I'm going to argue against the inevitability of fiat money. Fiat money was, completely engineered. I mean, it is engineering, and if you read the fiat standard, Safe does a great job of, Safe puts his hands up and says, "This is, this was the way to go, perhaps." Like, it made sense in a way, but it stopped making sense certainly in 1971. So was it an inevitability? No, it was engineered. And how was it engineered? Well, it was engineered by, well, the meeting at Jekyll Island was the final nail in the coffin in 1910. But this had been engineered for centuries before. The capture of the formation of central banks slowly around the world in each different country. And all of that can be traced back to the Rothschild dynasty, which started in the late 1770s. And Amschel, Meyer Rothschild, had five sons, and those five sons were sent off to different parts of Europe to start creating central banks. And that's, centuries-long plan. Captured the Bank of England after the Battle of Waterloo, 1812, 1815. I'm getting my dates slightly mixed up. And then managed to get the central bank in place in the US after the third attempt. But that was the big one, right? That was the crown in the jewel. That's what they needed to really push on to a fiat standard. So 1910, those unaware, there's a secret meeting that takes place in Jekyll Island. Six or seven key characters linked directly to the Rothschild family through Paul Warburg, who was their principal agent over there, who was actually the mastermind behind the whole thing. The Rockefeller family, very closely tied, especially to Nelson Aldrich, who put the meeting together. In fact, Nelson Aldrich's daughter, Abigail, was married to John D. Rockefeller Jr. So you can see how these dynasties just marry into each other and set these things up. And heavily connected with Jacob Schiff, and his company was Kuhn Loeb, and JP Morgan. So they're the names that were the mega minds that went across the Jekyll Island to set this think tank up to get the third and final attempt of a central bank in the US over the line. The first attempt was under Alexander Hamilton. The second attempt, I can't remember who that was under. That would have been late 1880s. And the third attempt, finally, yeah, they nailed it. 1910, they drew up all the plans. In 1913, they spent 3 years on the dog and pony show, going around gaslighting, using the newspapers that they controlled, the media that they controlled, to get public opinion. And then they smashed it through Congress Christmas week of 1913. That was all done with malice aforethought. There is, that there is no doubting that this whole thing has been engineered. It wasn't an organic progression into promissory notes and usury. It was engineered down to the final detail. They dotted the final I and crossed the T. They locked themselves in this mansion in Jekyll Island until it was done. And then they read it and reread it and reread it and reread it and reread it. They absolutely built this thing from the foundation to be a way to socially engineer us, steal all of our wealth, enslave us into a system that we had no idea we were being enslaved to. And here's the thing. People want that they wonder, who do we owe the national debt to? Well, the answer is the people that set up the central banks, the owners of the central banks, which are private entities and have stakeholders. And if you read the Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and even Behind the Curtain by John Hamer, they go through this. To your point earlier, they are the node, right? The one node. And what can this node do? It can print digitally infinite amounts of fiat currency, US dollars. So if it can print US dollars, the same as the Bank of England can print pounds, the same as the ECB can print euros digitally at zero cost, and then charge you interest on it to the government, which is usury, because the definition of usury is exorbitant interest rates are, so even if they are charging 0.5%, it's exorbitant because the money didn't exist in the first place. It's just a digital entry. So they lend the money to the government under the guise of a 10-year bond of 3%, whatever it is. Now the government has to pay back the money and interest. Why on earth, if you've got the power to print this, why on earth would you want that stuff back? You don't need it back. You can print it whenever you want. So what do you want? What's the actual game here? The actual game is you indebt them to the tune where you own them completely and can control their actions. They are literally puppets on a string. I think it was FDR said presidents are selected, not elected. And this is the guy that's had the longest reigning presidential seat of any president. So they're telling you. And so what do they want back? Well, they want everything. They want the land. They want the copper mines. They want the tin mines. They want the coal mines. They want control of everything. They want control of the water. They want control of the oil. They want control of the air, like credit carbon markets. Like what is this nonsense? People have made financial wizardry out of thin air. They're literally trading thin air on Wall Street to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. And it's the same people that have controlled this whole thing. So that's my rant on the people that have designed this whole system. Expertly done. And that's why we're all here, because Bitcoin is a complete opposite of that system. And I just hope we can bring more people to that realization.
Yeah, great accounting of the formation of the central bank, and I certainly share all of that sentiment as well. The central banking is the worst crime against humanity we've ever had. Enabled the century of total war. World War I never ended. We're still fighting it. It's a war of the state upon the individual. Responsible for tens of millions, hundreds of millions, perhaps, of deaths unnecessarily, a huge distortion of the production capacity, disruption of the technological deflation that we could have seen. We could be living in a much, much more prosperous, peaceful world. And I certainly share much of my disdain for all of these people. Just not possible for me to overstate that. Enough. But if I were to try and argue the other side a little bit and maybe
Good luck.
put a lot of that disdain and hatred for the central bank and the people who founded it, and maybe avoiding putting it blame on anyone, say Wilson or Aldrich, that what we saw was really a technological failure that, and hopefully I can represent it well, the Lynn Alden's Broken Money, that gold failed as a monetary technology because gold settlement was outpaced by our communication technology. And so it just became a lot easier to have deferred settlement with superior telecommunications, with the telegraph. And that was a centralizing force for the gold, which then gave incentive for people to not move the gold, made them more profitable, created centralization of the gold. And so, in that sense, that's how I might see it as inevitable that whether or not the Federal Reserve Act was passed in Christmas of 1913, I mean, if it failed, maybe they would have just tried again a couple of years later. Like the Aldrich Plan, I believe, failed in Congress several years prior, and that the given the nature of our planet, our species, the lag time between when all the central banks kind of founded in 1913, 14, to the point where we had enough of the precursor technologies to build a Bitcoin is too great that, it's a 100 year, a little under 100 year lag time, that sometime during that lag time they would have done this. And whether it was the guys in Jekyll Island in 1914, it could have been in 1920, 1930, 1940, that there was really nothing to stop them from doing this. There's no political way to stop this. You needed a technological way to prevent this from happening, and gold was inadequate. Its characteristics were unable to defend against runaway rehypothecation, as I like to call it. And so.
And yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying. And the fractional reserve banking on top of this, and the usury, the manipulating of interest rates, this all goes hand in hand with financial engineering is the only the only way I can kind of come to, convey my thoughts there. If not them, then yeah, you're right. If not them, then who? Then someone. Yeah, no, I see your point. I see your point.
You know that meme from, and we've used it on Noster too, that from Rocky IV, it's Ivan Drago says, if he dies, he dies. And I almost see Bitcoin like the same way. Like, if it's not able to withstand a state attack, then it's not good enough. So maybe I kind of see gold in the same way. Like, it was just always going to be inadequate. And there's nothing to stop anyone from making the central bank.
Because of the rehypothecation and the fractional reserve, that was the true fall down of gold. It's interesting. I'm waiting for Safe's book to fully hit. The gold standard. I'm looking forward to that one. Got a little sneak peek. Very interesting, and yeah, he is a fictional book, so there's fictional characters in there, but he addresses that this is the thing he's trying to address. How could you have got gold settling quicker, and if you did, what would the world look like? So there's a little, I don't know, little shill for Safe's next book. I hope you appreciate that.
True, yeah. I've heard him talk about it, and I understand the rough thesis, and that would be a good counter argument as well. I mean, I'll have to read it and get the whole story to see. Maybe I can find some little loopholes. Unlikely though. Saifedean is staggeringly intelligent, so maybe not.
Well, funnily enough, there's a new guy on the scene, Stefan Briggs. If you're not following him, give him a follow. I tweeted out his article just yesterday because I recorded with him just yesterday. I met him at a small conference in Switzerland, and we just got chatting. And quite new in his journey, of becoming fully involved in a Bitcoin community. He'd been a Bitcoiner for a little while, but he just left his fiat job, just left UBS. And he showed me some pictures of what are known as Asante spoons. I'm like, what the hell are these? He's like, did you know, like, there was this empire in Ghana called Asante that was like the flourished for 200 years? No. Like, do you know how they settled like transactions? No. It's like, with these spoons. What they passed the spoons around? He's like, no, the spoons measured, and each one had intricate carvings and whatever else, but the weight was the same in the actual scoop, and they would transact with gold dust. I'm like, holy shit. They're the sats. Like that was the lightning network of that civilization. So, imagine if you obviously, global trade is different, but to Lynn's point that gold failed because of telecommunications. Yeah, totally get that. You could settle a lot quicker if you were using gold dust, and you had a good means of transport. Which spoiler alert, that's what Safe's talking about in his new book. But all fun topics and really interesting anthropology to go down these rabbit holes. And Jesse Myers as well, his latest piece, Once in a Species, is a great read.
Yeah, I listened to an article I think on Bitcoin Audible about that, explaining about the beads. I have some I have a clamshell or wampum bead bracelet myself,
Do
just as
you?
just as a reminder, of yeah. So we're
Very cool.
programmed for to recognize scarcity, even if it's just, well, that shell looks cool. This shell is a little cooler than the other, that type of thing.
Yeah, totally believe that. And Jesse nailed it with that article. Yeah, looking forward to digging into that one
Yeah.
with him on the pod. Yeah, it's great.
Excellent. All right. So that concludes the rounds. Now we have our bonus question, which I'm not sure if you know what it is yet, but I have my
Nope.
hat here. I'll see if I can get it. The bonus question is, where does the yield come from? A
Yep.
la our friend, our Alan Farrington. So, bonus
That's the
points.
question.
The bonus question, bonus points for funny answers, short answers, novel answers, maybe I haven't heard before. And you can answer it in a lot of different ways.
So the Alan, I love Alan, and he's got a great one. The yield of the friends you make along the way. That is so profound, and classic Farrington, is so true. I thought of one that hit me actually. I think the first time we crossed 100K, and probably a lot of Bitcoiners experienced this like weird wave of emotion, considering it's just numbers, but like everything that we'd been trying to educate people about, the kind of the vindication, I suppose, and then the text messages that start finding their way to you, or the emails, or the conversations, the phone calls. And yeah, there was a couple in particular, just straight up thank yous from people that were brave enough to listen to me and my ramblings, close friends. So it's only hit me that was the yield of the thank yous that you get along the way. Because when you re especially if they come from family, a family man, or a mother, that's where it hits. And that's what keeps me focused on the podcast and trying to educate people and going to the conferences and meeting people. So yeah, I'll say that the yield of the thank yous you get along the way.
I love it. Very, very nice sentiment, given that this meme was started in a much more cynical fashion.
Yes.
And I most of my answers tend to be in that cynical fashion, so it's refreshing to have something so wholesome. Definitely the thank yous and the friends we've made along the way, even friends we meet, we don't ever get to do a call, but even friends we have just on Noster. So
Yeah, that's the yield, truly. I mean, pump it up.
excellent. So that concludes the Bitcoin gauntlet, and I will look back at my score sheet here and vibe code some of Daniel's score in real time. And so I will give Daniel a final score, including the bonus question, which I really like, of a 20. So.
Thank you. Is that out of 21 million or
We haven't decided what the high score is yet. We have an unlimited perhaps block
it's very
size.
much
So
like the are you familiar with the game show QI? Has that made it across to America?
not that I'm aware of, no, but
Yeah, well, it's a like a quiz show. You have two teams of two or three people, I can't remember. And at the end of it, they just give out these random scores. Like nobody ever knows where they've come from or how or why. But yeah, it's amusing.
I'll check it out. Thank you, Daniel. Well done, and thank you for your time. And last word is yours if you'd like to tell people where they can find you, what you're working on, anything else.
Yeah, well, it's great to get to know you, Tom. Thank you for inviting me. Hope to meet you in person one day. If we ever make it across to the US again for another conference, we're not due, so I'll let you know. But if you're in Europe, please let us know, and we'd love to come and hang out. And thank you again for, like I said at the beginning, thank you for what you're doing. If people want to learn more, my podcast is the Once Bitten podcast. Over 500 episodes now. Been running that since January 2020. My daughter Lauren generally asks the first question on each show. She's been doing that since she was 9. So if you go back and listen to old episodes, you will hear her asking the first question to Sailor and Jeff and Lynn and all of the people that you've and Preston. Oh, she actually asked Preston how helicopters fly. So that's a good one to go and listen to. They're not always Bitcoin related. We never know what we're going to get. I also have a book, and the book is called Choose Life. And that's a chronicle of how my wife and I quit the rat race in 2014 before we found Bitcoin and took the kids out of school and started world schooling them. We traveled with the kids for 2.5 years. So there's a lot in there about unschooling, world schooling, the education system, how to travel with young kids, and why you should. And the demons we faced making the decision. So if you want to check that out, please go to bitcoinbook.shop/bitten. Use the code bitten at checkout. Stay away from Amazon. Listen to this podcast on Fountain. Use the parallel economy that's being built, because if not you, then who? And yeah, thank you for listening.
Excellent. Thank you, Daniel.